Show Me the Science with Professor Luke O'Neill.
Hello, Luke O'Neill here, and welcome to Show Me the Science, my weekly podcast when I pick a topic that might be interesting, and I certainly find it interesting too. And it's big news today. Aoife is the new producer, and she has suggested this topic, so it's great to have Aoife suggesting things. And it's just in time for Easter. This is the science of snacking. We all like snacks, don't we? And you have your packet of biscuits in front of you, and you can't resist taking a biscuit or maybe getting a packet of crisps or whatever it is. And it turns out there's a fair bit of science around snacking. Now, we're in the world of nutrition and nutritional biochemistry and what snacks do to us metabolically and all kinds of things. Is it good? Is it bad? And very importantly, what can you do to avoid it? Because often we're drawn to these snacks and maybe we're taking too much of them. Now, how do we define it? And as a scientist, of course, you must define things very carefully. A snack is, and it's obvious this, food you eat between meals without ruining your appetite. Remember the old advertisement for, I think it was Milky Way or something. Anyway, it's a food you would eat between meals. It's normally quite small. It wouldn't be a big dinner, for instance, you know. So we know what a snack really is. And again, science will dig into this. On average, people have two snacks between meals. You know, isn't that amazing to think about that? And it could be sweets or it could be a packet of crisps or something like that, and that would constitute a snack. So that's how we define it. And of course, the first question is, why do we do it? Now, again, you don't need to be a genius. Sometimes it's hungry. You're a bit hungry and you take a snack, and that's one reason. Or you feel a drop in energy, so suddenly you begin to feel a bit sluggish and you might be drawn to taking a snack in that situation. But interestingly, they aren't the main reasons. The main reason, get this, when you rank them, is boredom. Isn't that strange? So you feel a bit bored and you reach for the snack. You reach for the sweets or whatever it is. So boredom is a big thing. The second reason is it's emotional. Now, we all know about comfort eating, I guess, don't we? But sometimes if you're feeling a bit down or whatever it might be, or even if you're feeling a bit up, you might be drawn to taking a snack. That's the other reason, that the two main reasons. Next would be hunger and the drop in energy. And the last one that I found very interesting is it's the word ubiquity. Now, what that means is there are snacks everywhere. They're very hard to avoid. They'll be in your house, they'll be in your kitchen or whatever it is. And that draws us to them. So we see them and we go, oh, I'll have some of that. And that seems to be an evolved trait. And it is actually about evolution, as I'll come back to. We need to eat, don't we? And we need nutrition. And the ubiquity of these snacks, meaning they're everywhere, they're being advertised, you will be drawn to them, and that might make you then take them as well. And in fact, one statistic I came across, and again, it's all about the numbers in science, 40% of advertising around food is advertising snacks. And you've seen the ads, haven't you, on TV? So they really are everywhere. And the food companies, of course, and we wouldn't give out to them for this, want to sell more product. So you see these things everywhere, and then we're drawn to them. And that'll be one way to avoid them, which I will come back to. Now, what are the commonest snacks? Well, it is biscuits, it's crisps, it's sweets, it's popcorn. They're the main ones. But equally, people do snack on fruit. And of course, that's a good thing. They snack on nuts and things like yogurt and little yogurt drinks. These are the ones that people are inclined to have between meals, I suppose. There's some categories. But the truth of the matter is we see a snack, and especially coming up to Easter, I suppose, as things like chocolate and so on, you know, that's the main category of snacks that we mainly talk about. And that's where the danger comes, because some of those ones wouldn't be the best for your health, because they'd be very high in sugar. Some of them are very high in salt. And as we know, too much salt and sugar is very bad for you. Now, of course, fruit would be wonderful, because that will be low in these things, most types of fruit, and nuts are really good. So if you do feel like snacking, you're better off going for nuts, say. And yogurt is pretty good as well, unless it's overly sweetened. But natural yogurt is great, and there's all kinds of health benefits to those ones. So basically, you can be tactical in your snacking is the overall goal here. Now, we are up against it, as I say, given that billions is spent on advertising these things. So therefore, try to avoid looking at those ads, I suppose, and that might help you as well. You don't see as many ads for nuts, do you? But you see loads of ads for different types of sweets. So that's the tricky part, really. And that's why things like biscuits and crisps and sweets kind of dominate, because they're more in our line of sight, I guess, to advertising. Now, is it good? Is it bad? Well, obviously, very importantly, it is linked to weight gain. You're taking in too many calories. You're having your main meals and then you're snacking between the meals and adding into the calorie count in the day. And that will mean you're inclined to put on more weight, obviously, because weight is usually a balance between calorie intake versus exercise. And some of these snacks are very high in calories, so therefore you're inclined to put on weight, and that has been shown. And then another thing I came across is if it's emotional snacking, which means you want to have that bit of comfort food, you're inclined to go for the foodstuffs that are higher in fat and sugar. And of course, they're the ones you want to try to avoid. So therefore, tricky. You feel like having something to help you, and you'll be drawn, you won't be taking carrots if you feel a bit down. You'll be reaching for something high in fat and sugar to give you that extra bit of comfort, I guess. And that's the thing to watch for, I suppose, overall. And then the other thing is, many of these snacks are nutrient poor. So they're very high in calories, and then they're low in nutrients. And the one thing you want to get from these is to get nutrients into your system, isn't it? You know? So therefore, these typical types of snacks are inclined to be nutrient poor, which means they are a negative. Now, there are some benefits, though. And one is it will decrease your appetite because you take a snack. And then when you get to your dinner, you might eat less, and therefore you're taking in less calories. There's some studies showing occasionally that some of these things are beneficial because your overall calorie intake for a day, say, might be slightly less if you snack occasionally because you're less inclined to eat loads of sort of food in your main meals, and therefore the calorie count kind of goes down. So it's important to remember there may be one or two benefits from this. But overall, there's pitfalls here to do with nutrients, and the two of the risk of putting on weight is the problem. Now, there are guidelines, and I've come across this on the Big American Nutritional website, which, by the way, if you're thinking about nutrition, there's a fantastic website. It's in the US, so you can find it. They give you guidelines on most nutritional things. And there was a whole section on snacking, which is great to read. The guidelines are this. If you go for something crunchy, that's a good thing, strangely. Now, crunchiness turns out to be something we are drawn to. We like the texture of food. And a big part of enjoying food is to do with texture. And the crunchy stuff, for some reason, is inclined to be healthier because it's things like carrots and fruit and nuts. They have this crunchy sound and we like them, and they're inclined to be beneficial then. Whole grains will have this texture as well. A great example on that website would be a good snack would be carrots, you know, bits of carrot and hummus. Hummus is very good for you. It's got all kinds of nutritional benefits in hummus. There's an example, and use the carrot to dip into the hummus, and then you'll be inclined to feel a little bit fuller, you know. And then that'll be good as well because the calorie count will be slightly less. So crunchiness seems to be important. Now, the trouble with that is crunchiness is also in crisps, isn't it? So you've got to be careful. And they're inclined to be less nutritionally sound, you might say. There are some healthy crunchy snacks, of course, including certain types of crisps, I suppose, that are good. But again, the fear of those ones is the high salt, high sugar content. And by the way, salt is the other ingredient you've got to watch, be very careful about. The three bad guys overall then are fat, sugar and salt, the very things that we crave, you know. And these are inclined to be high in certain foodstuffs, especially the processed foods, although not all processed foods have them, but still some do, and they're the things to watch for. So even though crunchiness is good, it's the right type of crunchiness is what we're looking for here, really. And there's a term I came across which is great. It's called psychoacoustics, and there's a word for you. What is psychoacoustics? This is actually a legitimate branch of nutritional science. Psychoacoustics is the sound that food makes as you eat it. And that crunchiness is one good example here. And we're drawn to that, and the crispiness is good. And so therefore, the psychoacoustic effect of food is something they've looked at. And if the crunchiness is coming off vegetables or whatever, when you bite into a raw carrot, that's a good thing. It means your body's telling you, oh, this is quite a good thing to be eating. And it's a good type of crunchiness, I guess, overall. And they've even measured the types of crunchiness between, say, carrots versus crisps. And it'll be a different type of crunchiness. And the one in the carrot is better than the one in the crisps is the overall idea here, I guess is what they're saying. Now, another thing that's important is it's really bad, and most people know this, to do this after 9 o'clock at night. So if you start eating after 9 p.m., you're inclined to put on a lot more weight, if you know what I mean, over time. Whatever way the calories are being used, they're inclined to be turned into fat tissue. And especially a thing called visceral fat. Now, visceral fat is a type of fat that you'll have around your midriff. That's the most dangerous kind of fat tissue of all. It irritates the body. It causes inflammation, as I would have discussed before. And it turns out if you eat at night, you're inclined to lay down the calories in the form of visceral fat. Now, again, this evolved, I suppose, in part back in the Stone Age or whatever. If you got food and you ate lots of it, you would lay down fat for times when food was scarce. And then you would burn the fat, you know, as your source of energy. The trouble now is, of course, we don't have any situation where food is scarce and the fat just builds up and causes all the problems. So you got to watch that. Try not to snack after 9 o'clock at night. The worst example of snacking that is there in the literature would be if you go out on the town and you have a few pints and then you get something on the way home. You crave that kind of food, you know, and that's a bad combination because that's much more inclined then to be laid down as fat tissue. So again, take a different route home and avoid the fast food place or whatever would be the advice there, because we're very susceptible to being drawn into these things, as I mentioned earlier, you know, and all the advertising will draw us towards it. And the, you know, the takeaway is very appealing late at night, especially when your appetite is up because of the alcohol. So the advice there is try to avoid those things, I guess, is the overall message there. Now, again, from an evolutionary point of view, it is intriguing. We're up against it because we evolved probably to snack. Now, what I mean by that is in ancient times, there weren't huge meals. Food was quite scarce, and you might come across a few berries on a tree or whatever, or maybe some nutrient source somewhere, some shellfish or whatever. I'm picking that randomly, but we were inclined to eat small portions, perhaps throughout the day, as opposed to having big meals because food was pretty scarce. So we're drawn to snacks the whole time, and we're up against it then as a result. One of you would be, or we're living in a time in modern times with the body designed for stuff that was around 300,000 years ago, and we're trying to escape that in a way and maybe optimize things a bit. So you got to be careful. But we are drawn to these snacks, I guess, for evolutionary reasons. So it's not your fault is a great message here. It's tricky to avoid them. It's hard to fight all this, you know. So again, as I'll come back to in a minute, there's various tips we can do to try to deal with this. And a great phrase that's commonly being spoken about now is called food noise. Now, what is that? Well, many people will now know about drugs like Ozempic and the semaglutides, right? And they're great for diabetes. They're great for obesity. One thing they do is they suppress this thing called food noise. Now, what is food noise? It's this buzzing in your brain, almost subconsciously, that makes you want to eat. And again, it's an evolved thing. You know, you have to take in nutrition. And that food noise is especially evident for drawing you towards these snacks that we're talking about. You can kind of hear the cocktail sausages in the fridge calling you. It's that kind of thing, you know, and then you can't stop thinking about them. So the big benefit of drugs like Ozempic is it dials down the food noise and therefore people eat less and they're less inclined to snack. Now, that's the extreme end. You wouldn't be taking these drugs unless you've got a BMI that's high and at higher risk then of obesity-associated diseases. But still, one good effect here is to dial down the food noise. There's other ways to dial down the food noise as well, which I'll come back to in a minute. But it is all about that food noise that we're evolved to have in our brains. The second thing is, it turns out that snacking is unusual in that when you're full, you will still be inclined to go for snacks. Isn't that strange? Usually we feel full. It's called satiety. And we feel full and we stop eating. In this situation, it kind of breaks through that and therefore you keep eating. I guess this is where things like dessert came in. See, imagine if it still strikes as unusual, and I'm sure we've all been in this situation. You're in a restaurant, you have a starter and a main course, and you feel pretty full, but you still order dessert because it's breaking through that feeling of fullness to go for this snack situation, the dessert being a good example of the ultimate snack. So that's a peculiar part of snacking. It seems to override other systems in our brain about nutrition, and that's something that people are very interested in analysing. And again, drugs like Ozempic will decrease that as well. And you'll be less inclined to go for the dessert. It's turning off that food noise that says, eat that snack of the end of a meal. Now, what's the best way, though, to avoid food noise? Because, as I say, these drugs like Ozempic, they're very serious drugs. You shouldn't be taking them unless your doctor recommends them, because they have all kinds of consequences, I guess. So you've got to be careful. You can avoid the food noise or dial it down and then have less snacks if you make sure your main meal, right, your dinner or your breakfast, has lots of protein and fiber. So those two ingredients are inclined to make you feel less of a need for snacking. Now, what's fiber? It's in vegetables, obviously. It's in grains, you know. Protein is obvious. It's in meat, and certain vegetables are rich in protein. They make you feel fuller and they're inclined to mean you're less likely to snack. So that's one thing to do. Think about what's in your dinner, I suppose. The second thing is it's all about the environment. Now, this, as I said earlier, we're drawn to these things. So put the biscuits away. Stick them in the cupboard. Don't have snacks in your line of sight and avoid advertisements, I suppose. And then you'd be less likely to dial up the food noise and go for these things. That's the second piece of advice. Two other ones that struck me as very interesting was, it turns out if you have a bad night's sleep, you're inclined to snack more. I guess there's a bit of stress in the system and you're going for the comfort eating. So a good night's sleep means people snack less. And as ever, another beneficial effect of sleep, of which there's many, is you'll be less inclined to snack. And then a key one is you may have stress triggers that draw you towards the snack. Now, who knows what they might be in each of our lives, in our day-to-day lives. It could be you're sick queuing for a bus or whatever it might be, and you reach for that Mars bar or whatever it is. So you have to try to notice what the stress triggers are and then try and avoid them if you can. And that would mean then you're less likely to snack. And that's the kind of main pieces of advice that I came across as a way to avoid snacking. Although very importantly, a little bit of what you fancy is okay, remember. And we all know that, don't we? You don't want to be too zealous about this either. The occasional snack that you enjoy will be fine. It may de-stress you, and that's a good thing, you know. But overall, these are the key pieces of advice to avoid snacking. Now, of course, Easter is the worst time for this because there's Easter eggs everywhere, isn't there? Especially with kids. And especially children are a very important group to think about with regard to getting them away from these snacks in a way. But maybe around Easter, you could let yourself off the hook slightly. But try and not overdo it, as ever. And the advice always is, moderation as best you can is fine. So there you have it. The science of snacking as recommended by Eva, which is a great suggestion. And of course, my podcast is a News Talk production available for download every Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.